Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Fast Fill. This is our first episode recorded in 2021, so happy new year all. Fast Fill is a podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America. We're the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by both natural gas and biomethane, and from promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America, and joining me today is our longtime general counsel and director of regulatory affairs, Jeff Clark. Welcome, Jeff, and happy new year.
Thank you, Dan. Happy new year to you, too, and thank you for inviting me to this conversation today.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're joining me, and we thought we'd kick off 2021 talking a little bit about natural gas transit. We concluded 2020 with the launch, or the release, I should say, of a massive report entitled Maximizing Clean Transit Investment. It was, I almost feel like you and I gave birth to this report over about 9 or 10 months last year during the COVID pandemic. It certainly gave us an awful lot of research, side research projects to do. But we released that in the beginning of December. We had a terrific webinar shortly thereafter. We should mention that all of those resources, the report, executive summary, a copy of the webinar and the slides that were presented during that, can all be found on our website at ngvamerica.org. It's in our resource center. You can also access all those collaterals on the main page if you go to the vehicle section and drop down to transit. All those items are there. But Jeff, let's tell our listeners a little bit about the impetus and why we put that report together. What's it all based on?
Well, you know, the desire to put this report together, there's a huge amount of interest in clean transportation today. And one of the primary focuses is transit buses throughout the country. We've always been interested in trying to clean up transit buses because they're operated in urban areas. And there is a significant fleet of alternative fuel buses out there. And more recently, there's been an interest in electrifying transit buses. And as you know, Dan, there are a significant amount of natural gas buses in place today. I think there's 125 plus transit agencies that operate natural gas buses. And so what we wanted to do is some information for those transit agencies and other transit agencies that are looking at future investments. We wanted to give them some great information they can look at in terms of comparing natural gas and electric buses and understanding what the trade-offs are between the different technologies and what the benefits of moving to the different technologies is. And what we did was we went out and we looked at available information. There's a lot of great information available from the Department of Energy, which has funded the Renewable Energy Laboratory to go out and do analysis of real world operation of natural gas and electric and even fuel cell buses. And so we dug into some of that data and we present that in our report. And we also were able to look at some other information that's recently become available. The California transit agencies today are required to submit reports to state government on their plans for moving to electric buses. And those plans give a lot of details on what the cost of investing in electric transit buses could be for agencies and what the operational complications might be for moving to electric buses. So we were able to benefit from that information. And then lastly, we were able to present a lot of emission data based on some great tools that the Argonne National Laboratory has available that provide some really good analysis of the different emission profiles of these different technologies in operation.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really comprehensive analysis. I think we have a 96 source citations, 38 tables and charts, and you know, I really want to thank you for all your work on that, putting that all together. It was it's a great piece, and I hope that people are accessing it and will continue to access it. And you know, I think it's important to note that our motivation for this was to provide sort of an apple to apple comparison, right? Of all of these reports and studies and bring them all together to understand really what the cost is, the true cost, the environmental impact, the reliability, performance range that CNG and RNG fuel buses are having versus this emerging battery electric transit technology. We hear a lot that if it's not going to be battery electric, it's not going to be the best option out there. And we think that is obviously a little short. So let's talk a little bit about some of the key takeaways, Jeff. One of them was that we found that, you know, there's a lot of disparity in terms of reports of what the true cost of a natural gas bus is, or true cost of, sorry, what of an electric, battery electric bus is. But we found, looking at a whole host of studies, that the natural gas option is actually less expensive to purchase.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't a surprise to us. We following APTA, the American Public Transportation Association, publishes information on the cost of transit buses. And we've been following that for a number of years. And for our report, we pulled in some data from, I think it was a 2019 version of their transit vehicle database. And so, yeah, not surprising to us, electric buses still cost several hundred thousand dollars more than new natural gas buses. And, you know, most of the reports that we see out there, even the ones that are very favorable to electric buses, they acknowledge that that upfront cost, but then they assume that the operation cost of the buses will be a lot less than natural gas and diesel buses. And so, you know, their takeaway conclusion is that, well, the buses will pay for themselves over their life. And so we really dug into that a lot more, and we provide some analysis on that issue in the report to kind of understand if that's true. And, you know, our high level conclusion was that it's not true. They don't pay for themselves because the operational savings of the buses where they do exist are not enough to pay down that incremental cost. And then what we also saw was that the buses, the way they're being used on shorter routes means that they're accumulating fewer miles during each year and fewer miles over their life. So even if there is a savings, it's more difficult for them to pay down that incremental cost if they're being operated for fewer miles. I think that's a pretty big takeaway. But the idea that they're going to be 50% less or a dollar a mile cheaper to operate, we just haven't seen that in the data that's available from NREL and other sources. So that high upfront cost is really a problem for the electric buses.
Well, one of the things when we broke it down, we talked about refueling infrastructure, and right out the bat, obviously, we can understand that the refueling of CNG buses is far less expensive, requiring far less investment over the next 10, 15, 20 years to expand clean transit footprint than it would be if we went electric. And I think the Foothill Transit studies and some of the reporting itself, or maybe perhaps what was reported to California agencies, there's going to cost upwards of $121 million over the next 12 years just to recharge their fleet of buses, right, to get that infrastructure in place. And in a lot of instances, we found in studies that we looked at that while the costs that were reported back were simply the cost from that would be accrued by the transit agency itself, they were not costs that were going to be picked up by the local utility. We can assume that those costs will just be passed on to ratepayers, right?
Yeah, that's true. One of the things we wanted to look at was these comparisons. Are people really taking into account the significant investment that's required for electric charging equipment? And if you look at the California fleet examples, what you have to remember that's important is many of these transit agencies already have natural gas. They already have the fueling stations, the compressors, and the equipment there to refuel their buses. So those are essentially cost sunk costs. They've already they can benefit from those costs down the road. So a lot of these transit agencies would not have a true comparison would acknowledge that they've already invested in natural gas. They don't need to make that investment in that infrastructure. And then I think the issue that you're getting into is that these cost analysis that look at the what capital cost of acquiring charging units and so forth, they don't account for the upgrades that are required for the electric utility system to get that electricity to the site. What you see with electric transit buses is that if you're going to refuel a large number of buses at a single location, they require an enormous amount of electricity to be made available to them. So that means the system upgrades in the neighborhood or whatever location they're in. They've got to beef up that infrastructure, and someone's got to pay the cost for that new infrastructure.
Right. And then, you know, in the course of us looking into what those fueling costs would be over, say, the 10 or 12 year lifetime of these newly purchased buses, it was really difficult for us to understand what the true electricity cost was, right? Because of the volatility of demand charges and all the extra fees that are associated with it, it was really tough to sort of track that on an apples to apples comparison, not only between CNG and what the cost of CNG would be with battery electric, but what one transit agency might pay over, say, another transit agency, because all those costs are just so remarkably different.
Yeah, it looks to us like if you look at the rates that some of these transit agencies are paying for electricity, these are pretty preferential rates, right? So they're the utilities are going through a rate case and they're getting a special rate for the electricity. And so that appears to be an introductory rate or an incentive rate. True market rates are probably going to be much higher. And so we give some examples of what, say, Tesla charges its customers, and I think it was 28 or 29 cents a kilowatt hour was the fee, which was quite a bit higher than what some of these other transit agencies are paying. And then the other thing is that the studies, when they look at what the cost of the fuel is, Foothills is a great example. The cost of the natural gas appears to be a fully loaded price that reflects the cost of not only purchasing the commodity and compressing it, but operating and maintaining the fueling station. The cost of the electricity does not appear to account for the cost, capital cost of the equipment or maintaining it. So there's quite a bit of discrepancy there. So we would imagine that the electricity price would be higher if you were to take into account those additional costs.
Right. We spent a lot of time in the report talking about reliability and resiliency, not just, you know, refueling resiliency and what happens when power goes out, which we see a lot more frequent today in Southern California, whether it's because of natural disasters or the prevention of, you know, future fires and things like that. But the natural gas buses, at least at Foothill, were far more reliable and dependable getting out the door every day than the electric buses that they had in service, right?
Yeah, that's true. And so in the transit industry, according to the reports that Emerald put together, you know, they want buses to be available 85% of the time. So they keep buses in reserve, realizing that there's going to be maintenance of buses, there's going to be downtime of buses, but they want buses to be available 85% of the time. And so what we saw in the Foothills example was the electric buses were not meeting that 85% pullout. I think the majority of the buses, the 35-foot electric buses operated by that fleet during the time frame we were looking at, were only available about 63% of the time. The natural gas buses were available over 90% of the time. So a big discrepancy there in terms of being available. And, you know, I think one of the things that we tried to emphasize is that to a transit agency, that's the most critical factor, right? Making pullout and being available to move customers. And so we were pretty pleased to see how well the natural gas buses are performing compared to other technologies.
Yeah, so that off, you know, it obviously works on their reserve factor, right? Having to have more buses in reserve. But then we also studied, I think, a little bit, we looked at some reports, not just from Foothill, but elsewhere, on sort of the duty and performance of the buses that were in service. And we talked about not only them providing more work, CNG providing more work and more reliability, but it really didn't matter what route or what the weather factors were when it relates to natural gas buses, whether fueled by conventional natural gas or renewable natural gas. But it really was impacting at least some of these other DOE studies and anecdotal reports that we were able to pull in other communities, right?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, for electric buses, there may be certain markets where the performance can be optimal. But if they're being operated in climates where they're too hot and they've got to run the air conditioned all the time, or too cold and they've got to run the heat all the time, we see the efficiency of these buses suffers. And that can have a big impact. And you don't see the same sort of impact on the natural gas buses. So I think that's something people really need to look at. When you look at the efficiency ratings of electric buses that are reported by manufacturer, those are based on the FTA Altoona test, and those tests do not require them to operate the heating or cooling system. So they're not really a true real world test of how the buses are going to operate in use.
Yeah, there, we pulled in an NREL test up in King County, Washington, which is the Seattle area, and it was really interesting to see how, when the temperature went down, what that did to the mileage, the fuel economy for the battery electric fleet. It was equal to, I think, something like a 24-25% reduction when the temperature fluctuated or temperature dropped. And so, you know, as an upstate New York kid, I'm thinking, well, geez, what was the temperatures? And then you figure, well, it's Seattle, and the coldest temperature recorded in Seattle that December was above 40 degrees. So it sort of leads, you know, questions you, or makes you think, what happens when we're trying to run these buses in a Minneapolis, right, or in a St. Paul or Chicago in January or February?
Yeah, and I think we tried to provide some information. There were a few news reports of some demonstration projects that had been done in some very cold climate areas of the country, and the results weren't good for the buses. They had to be taken out of service pretty quickly because they were operating those systems and running the batteries down.
Yeah. So we always hear from detractors, they'll push back and say, well, you got to understand, though, this, it doesn't matter the cost. It doesn't matter the future of a clean economy, future of clean transportation. The future, if we want to save the planet, is we've got to go all electric. So we're seeing this big push to force electrification. So I know we spent some time in our report saying, well, wait a minute, just because it's electric doesn't mean it's always cleaner. And most of, I think, the folks that are listening recognize that CNG vehicles are, in essence, zero emissions equivalent when it comes to NOx and particulate matter and clean air. But we also found, and you did a lot of calculation related to natural gas and the natural gas output here in terms of carbon. And so, you know, one of the key takeaways from this, or the remaining takeaways, was that these natural gas buses are actually a big part, and can be a big part, of decarbonizing transportation. Let's talk a little bit about the emissions profiles that we found.
Yeah, that's what you see with the new natural gas buses is that there's a couple of things going on. The Cummins engines, which are dominate the heavy duty market and are used in transit buses, those have for the last several years have all been certified to the ultra low NOx level. That's 0.02 gram per brake horsepower hour for NOx. These are the cleanest internal combustion engines in the world. They're 90% cleaner than the EPA standards require. And if you look at just 10 years ago, these buses are probably about 99% cleaner than a new transit bus that was ordered prior to 2010. And of course, they emit virtually no particulate matter and no diesel particulate matter.
Right.
And the great thing about the natural gas buses is that emissions control technology is relatively simple. It's like a three-way catalyst like we use in light-duty vehicles. And they're not really susceptible to emissions problems the way some of the diesel equipment is. So what we see with the natural gas buses is they're certified to extremely low levels of emissions, and then they continue to produce those extremely low levels in use. We're not seeing the problem with the emissions the way we're seeing some of the studies that come out and say the newer diesel vehicles have higher emissions in certain applications with low speeds. So that's one. So in terms of those criteria pollutants that we care about, in terms of affecting ozone and the air we breathe, natural gas is delivering extremely low emissions. And then I think you were touching on the carbon issue. Mm-hmm. Focus today is on climate change and carbon dioxide equivalent emissions and what can you do for me there. And so the great thing about natural gas now is we're seeing a lot of our transit users and really a lot of our market moving to renewable natural gas. And that's natural gas that's being produced from landfills, from dairies, agricultural waste, wastewater treatment facilities. And this is renewable natural gas that has an extremely low carbon profile. The dairy waste that's being introduced into the system today has a negative carbon intensity because we're capturing emissions that would otherwise occur. And then we're capturing methane emissions and we're combusting it as CO2. So there's a win-win there when you do that. And so we use, I think I mentioned before, some of the tools that Argonne has. Argonne National Laboratory is renowned for the GREET model. And they have a suite of other tools that kind of are connected to the GREET model, the heavy-duty vehicle emissions calculator and the A-Fleet tool come from the GREET. And those tools allow you to either look at your footprint or your reductions over the life of a bus compared to other technologies. And so when you model RNG, renewable natural gas, and you compare the capital cost of the bus and then look at the cost to reduce pollution based on that capital cost of the bus, natural gas is extremely cost competitive compared to electric buses. So that means that the takeaway really is that for the same amount of money, a transit agency can buy a lot more buses, a lot more natural gas buses, and at the end of the day, deploy more new, cleaner buses, take more older, dirtier buses off the road, and achieve greater overall emission reductions, especially carbon emissions if they're going to use renewable natural gas. So it's really a win-win opportunity for these communities. It's a win-win for communities that have already invested in natural gas, and it's a win for communities that are looking to go to something new. And want something that works, right? They want the buses to be available to make pullout. They don't want to have to reconfigure their transit routes. They want something that works for them the way their diesel buses work today. And natural gas gives them that opportunity, but much, much cleaner emissions, obviously.
Right. And we, in fact, found, provide a lot of evidence that natural gas buses really offer the most cost-effective emission reduction investment. And you mentioned before some of these consulting reports that transit agencies in California have to put together for to the state. And there was the one study for Foothill found that, I'm just pulling up the numbers here, that if there are no incentives, it would cost them Foothill Transit, almost $410 million in total cumulative additional costs over 25 years to move to battery electric. If it did receive incentives, it would be more like $141 million in cumulative additional costs over 25 years. That's a lot of money. And so you looked and took that one step further and said, well, what would a $10 million investment buy? Or we also looked at it and said, well, what if we converted the entire U.S. fleet? And we found some really big discrepancies. I don't know if you have those $10 million investment figures in front of you, but I'm going to share it, and then I'm going to let you talk a little bit about the overall fleet changeover. But when we took $10 million and decided you could do battery electric, you could do diesel, you could do natural gas, we found that you could purchase 50% more natural gas buses than battery electric buses. You would provide 51% more NOx emission reductions and 78% more greenhouse gas emission reductions when you converted to a natural gas fleet using RNG. That's a pretty big cost-effective difference. What did we find sort of on a big picture when we were looking at replacing the entire national fleet if a trend to forced electrification were successful?
Yeah, I think I gotta find that in my notes. I'm trying to look at this. The cost to replace the entire U.S. fleet. Well, one of the things we looked at was the 40-foot buses, right?
Right.
there's like 60 or 65,000 transit buses in the U.S., give or take a few thousand. But 50,000 of those buses are 40-footers. So we looked at the 40-foot buses. Those are the dominant bus in the marketplace. So we said, what would it cost to replace 50,000 buses? And I think we said for the CNG buses, it was about $47.5 billion to replace all those buses. And this was using data from ICF that includes not only the capital cost of the buses, but infrastructure and operation and maintenance costs for these buses. And then for the battery electric buses, we said, you know, we looked at the analysis that we had, said, well, you're going to have to buy more battery electric buses to do the same amount of work. And what the impact of that? And it's about $24 billion more. Because what we've seen in these reports coming from California is that the way these transit agencies are looking to deploy electric buses is they're going to buy, they're going to shorten their routes and they're going to deploy more buses. So we included a factor of 20% increase in purchasing of buses. And so the electric buses would cost significantly more.
Yeah. And we found, I think, when you look at these various reports and you add up all the costs, it wasn't just the Foothill study, but there was a report by ICF for particular clients. CNG buses over time had the lower total operational costs, and not just purchase, but the overall cost. And when we're talking in a COVID economy, $24 billion, that difference could do an awful lot of good. That's for sure. Jeff, when we're talking about operational costs, let's talk a little bit. Let's switch from the report to some activity that's been that we were successful in here in Washington at the end of the 2020 legislative year, specifically the alternative fuel tax credit. It was extended for another year. Let's talk a little bit about that and how that impacts transit agencies and transit properties.
Yeah, the 50-cent alternative fuel tax credit, natural gas does benefit from that. So the provision in the Internal Revenue Code provides that that incentive goes to essentially to the retail seller of natural gas, or if there's not a retail transaction of CNG or LNG, then it goes to the user. And so that's what we see with a lot of transit agencies. They own their own fueling station. And so they're compressing their own gas and they're putting the gas into the transit agencies. They actually qualify for this 50-cent tax credit. So we know firsthand from conversations with transit agencies over the years that a number of them do benefit from this tax credit and do take it. And then beyond transit agencies, you know, other users of natural gas that own their own fueling can benefit from this credit as well.
And you don't have to be, you can be a tax exempt entity in order.
You can be a tax exempt entity. That's true. You have to be registered with the Internal Revenue Service as an alternative fueler in order to claim the credit. So if you previously, you know, I think what you said was that it's been extended for 2021. Mm-hmm. You previously claimed that credit, then you no doubt are a registered alternative fueler. But if you are a new user of CNG and you've never claimed the credit, then you need to make sure you're registered with the IRS. They have Form 637 you use to register with them, and you got to get that done first before you can claim a credit.
So kudos to Allison Cunningham and our Federal Government Affairs Committee for working and championing to get that passed. It was included in the federal fiscal year 2021 omnibus spending and joint COVID-19 stimulus package that the Congress passed just prior to adjourning for the year. But there was one other interesting item in there that we were championing some language as well for the Federal Transit Administration Low No program. Tell our listeners a little bit about that program and what we were able to do to sort of advance some parity in that as well.
Yeah, the low or no emission bus program is a discretionary program that the Federal Transit Administration administers. And so unlike formula grant programs, which all the states qualify for and are divvied out according to a formula, these discretionary money, you have to apply for it and are competitively awarded by the Federal Transit Administration. one issue that we've had over the last several years is that even though this was a program that was intended to fund both low and zero emission technologies, the Federal Transit Administration has been only funding electric buses, essentially, or fuel cell buses over the last several years. And this program has been awarded over $100 million a year. I think the latest is $125 million. So it's an important funding source for transit agencies that want to move to cleaner buses. So this directive that's in this new language in the appropriations bill, we're quite happy to see, directs the Federal Transit Administration to be more equitable in how it provides the funding to not only fund the electric buses, but also fund other very clean technologies. So we think that's going to be beneficial to natural gas, and we're pleased to see that.
Yeah, and hopefully that will be included in an impact, not just, you know, typical regular regular grant program each and every year, but anything that might come through in a special stimulus or infrastructure package later this year. So that's
important. Yeah, I mean, in general, I would think even more broadly speaking, what we hope is that these programs, you know, we're probably going to see an infrastructure bill this year. This Congress wants to really spend a lot of money on climate change efforts. And we hope that they take into account well-to-wheel emissions and really give RNG, renewable natural gas, the benefit it deserves in these funding efforts. Because, you know, I think it's been discouraging to see some of these past programs focus only on the tailpipe and ignore the upstream implications of fuels, which can be enormous. And so I think we're winning on that argument. And I think, you know, the RNG's got a great story, and I think policymakers are receptive to it. So I think we'll have some more success in that area in the future.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate your time today and the check-in. Thanks to you also, our listeners, for tuning in. For more information on NGV America's technology and marketing and development and federal government advocacy work and activities, visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can also find out more about our Maximizing Clean Transit Investment Report, access to it, and the collaterals. That's all at ngvamerica.org/vehicles/transit. And finally, you can share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org. Also on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. So on behalf of Jeff Clark and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us. Thanks to you all for joining both me and Jeff. And you just experienced the Fast Bill. Until next time.